As students begin heading back to school, do you think they'll be learning about the founding principles that made America the freest and most prosperous nation in history? Will they learn that our unalienable rights are God-given and not granted by government? Will they be given a full and honest account of our nation's history? The answer to all of these questions is yes for students at Hillsdale College. In addition to teaching college students, Hillsdale has extended its teaching to K-12 students and lifelong learners like you. If you're not doing so already, one of the best ways to start learning from the folks at Hillsdale is through Imprimis, Hillsdale's free digest of liberty. You can sign up for free at this special website for a limited time at dana4hillsdale.com. And you can look forward to Imprimis each month. It's interesting, useful, and free, and it's one of the best and smartest in conservative constitutionalist thought. Find out more about Hillsdale College and sign up for Imprimis at dana4hillsdale.com. That's dana4hillsdale.com.
I'm calling out Secretary Blinken, Secretary Austin, General Milley, General McKenzie, Lieutenant Colonel Whited, who could not give the order to the snipers to take out the bomber before he detonated his vest, and ultimately the president. Do what our son did. Be a grown-ass man. Admit to your mistakes. Learn from them so that this doesn't happen ever, ever again.
Oof.
You all need to resign immediately.
Oh, man. So that was just from some of the remarks yesterday from Gold Star parents who were made Gold Star families. Because their family member or child was one of the 13 Marines killed, one of the 13 servicemen killed in Kabul. You know, remember Biden's disastrous withdrawal. Golly, some of them, it's amazing, absolutely amazing. And these families, in some of these instances, it's almost like these families never got the chance to actually, you know, tell the administration what their thoughts were about what exactly happened. Welcome to the show. Happy Tuesday to you. A lot of stuff to dissect today. Your lovable curmudgeon, Dana Lash, here. You can listen coast to coast. You can watch the simulcast of the nationally syndicated radio program on YouTube, Facebook, channel 347, DirecTV as well. We're going to get into everything, the latest with the administration, Democrats' playbook in D.C. We're going to look at how they are wanting to exponentially increase the cost of basic semi-automatic rifles. That's something else. We're going to also look at 2024 because I got a bone to pick, a pretty sizable one, in fact. I'm done with Republicans playing checkers. I'm done with stupid strategy. With an absence of any good tactic. I'm done with bad campaign consulting. I'm just done with it. And thankfully, I don't have to watch what I say because I don't care about making friends in any of this. So we're going to break it down. But this starting with some of the left today, this forum that was in California, it was hosted by California Congressman Daryl Issa. And as you know, the House is on recess. They're in recess for, well, it's not 6 weeks anymore. I guess it's five weeks, another, you know, month and a week. And they're all in their home districts, et cetera, et cetera. So Daryl Issa is back in his district, and he had this forum in which he invited these Gold Star families who lost their loved ones out to speak to, you know, what happened, how they felt, you know, what all of it. And it is some of this, what happened with this, because you remember the it was the story of one of the Marines who was one of the 13. And he was the individual who said, and there was he gave an interview, and I think we had played it at the time. It was on TikTok. I hate TikTok. But it was Sergeant Tyler Vargas Andrews. He was one of the Marines who survived the explosion and that killed the 13. And he had said that when the president and first lady had come to his hospital room, the president reached out to shake his hand, even though the guy had, you know, his arm was gone. And then he started talking about his son, and then he leaned into his face and he was like, what do you want? What do you want? It was just weird. Just weird. And it's one thing when you see the president of the United States like fall upstairs and do all this other stuff. But then when he does this, you know, when you're meeting with Gold Star families and you're not all the way sentient and stuff like this happens, it seems like insulting. The Gold Star family that we played there, that was the father, Darren Hoover, who called for the resignation of POTUS and the cabinet members over everything that had happened. But this Marine who survived, he was saying that Joe Biden started talking about his son. And apparently Biden also told the some of these Gold Star families that, yes, his son also came home in a flag-draped coffin. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was the thing that happened. I was really shocked. It was one of the mothers, mother of Dylan Moroa, who was sharing exactly what had happened with us. And she was saying that, yes, you know, Biden had also said, yes, my son, too, also came home in a flag-draped coffin. That's not what happened. His son, Beau, did not come home in a flag-draped coffin, Kane, as we all know. I mean, it was unfortunate that his son had brain cancer, but his son having brain cancer was not him actually being killed in action. And the many ways that Biden has tried to, I think, manipulate this and has tried to use this it's just insulting, and it makes you, and you can't sit here and say, oh, he's a grieving father. Stop hiding behind that veneer, especially when he repurposes it 6 ways to Sunday to fit whatever the situation calls for. That's what makes it seem insincere. So this, as all of this comes out, the Free Beacon had a story discussing how the administration has given about $2.3 billion to the Taliban. Taliban-controlled Afghanistan. Since they retook control of the government in 2021 following the deadly evacuation, the catastrophic and absolutely shambolic evacuation due to the administration, we are still the top patron of this. The top patron. Remember this? This was the Biden press conference at the time. This is back in 21 on the Afghan withdrawal. This is audio soundbite 16. This did not go well.
Is a Taliban takeover of Afghanistan now inevitable?
No, it is not. Because you have the Afghan troops have 300,000 well-equipped as any army in the world and an Air Force against something like 75,000 Taliban. It is not inevitable.
Mr. President, thank you very much. Your own intelligence community has assessed that the Afghan government will likely collapse.
That is not true.
Is it? Can you please clarify what they have told you about whether that will happen or not?
That is not true. They did not respect it.
So what is the level of confidence that they have that it will not collapse?
The Afghan government, the leadership has to come together. They clearly have the capacity to sustain the government in place.
And do you see any parallels between this withdrawal and what happened in Vietnam with subsequent
healing? None whatsoever. Zero. What you had is that entire...
See, what gets me about this is that, you know, at the time, and we went over this back in 2021 when all of this happened, at the time, the administration... when they withdrew, and I think you all remember, and I just want to touch on this because I feel like it's important, and I, especially in the context of what these families had shared yesterday, but the Afghan military, especially with air support, we were their air support. I mean, it's one thing to have helicopters, and it's one thing to have a number of other, you know, pieces of equipment, artillery, munitions, whatever, but when you require air support, we were their air support. I mean, after you lose that, you are severely, you're hampered. I mean, you're put at a great disadvantage, and that's ultimately what had happened. We withdrew, and they were completely unaware of what was going on. Remember, in the morning, people were waking up, and I mean, it was shameful, and it was against the guidance of every military official, and I'll dare even say, even against the advice of General Milley. Which is shocking, but still, I mean, at least he has some idea of self-preservation and preservation for people in uniform. But against every bit of counsel that he received. By the way, that's why the previous president left in place a residual force. Because he was told, look, I know you want to take everything out. You do that, you're going to have a power vacuum, and it is going to be catastrophic. I mean, there's a difference between wanting to do something and then having to deal with the other variables, the non-static variables in the situation. So this is what Democrats have been dealing with. And we're going to talk more about this as well, including this 1,000% tax that they want to propose on AR-15s. I got to tell you, I'm getting really tired coming into 2024 stuff of all of this stuff with Tommy Tuberville. I don't even know Tommy Tuberville. I literally did not even know I was saying his last name wrong. I was thinking Tuberville. Tuberville is so much more fun to say. And remember, he had me blocked for some odd reason. I never said anything about him. The dude had me blocked for a while. I don't think he has me blocked anymore. But he is the he's, if you remember, the big fight over the military promotions, etc. It's being blamed on Tommy Tuberville. It's being blamed on him. And in fact, one of the latest to criticize him is Republican Nikki Haley. Now, she came out today and there's this piece from The Hill where she's slamming him, and it's not just The Hill, it's, you know, a number of outlets, including NBC. The media is very excited to run with this headline because they get to use a Republican as a cudgel against another Republican while also demonizing an issue that Republicans say that they support. And this has to go down to the political identity politics that Democrats were demanding be attached to the NDAA and the military authorization therein. And this includes the military family's assignments and promotions. Nikki Haley slammed Tommy Tuberville's months-long hold, this is The Hill, on hundreds of military promotions as quote-unquote shameful today, accusing the senator of using the promotions as, quote, fodder in his battle with the Pentagon over its abortion policy. And the caveat to the abortion policy is taxpayer-funded abortion on demand as birth control policy. Because apparently some people, like Nikki Haley, think that our military members are too damn stupid to regulate their own bodies without the assistance of Uncle Sam, which, as a very smart listener pointed out, doesn't that kind of undermine the idea of readiness? Because doesn't readiness also begin with the individual? There you go. He said, yes, I had a listener say, spitballing here, military personnel are under an obligation to help maintain readiness by taking steps to prevent pregnancy. That's what a smart person says, everyone. That's what a smart person says. But see, dumb people assume that everyone is too weak or ignorant without the hand of Uncle Sam to regulate their own bodies. And why a Republican is taking Biden's position here is beyond me. Tuberville's accused of blocking these nominees since March over the Defense Department's new policy to use taxpayer dollars to pay for service members' abortions. And again, these are recreational, taxpayer-funded, as birth control abortions. Let's not make any mistake as to what this is. And this was what they were pushing in the wake of Roe v. Wade's overturning. Now, you have two military services without a confirmed leader. I understand that. The head of the Marine Corps retired last month. The head of the Army retired Friday. So we don't have a head of the Army or Marine. And instead of saying, I can't believe Democrats are holding up military promotions. Instead of saying, I can't believe our Marine Corps and our Army, the head of these branches, retired and we can't replace them because Democrats are holding up military promotions, Democrats are holding up military assignments because they are insisting on attaching abortion as birth control taxpayer-funded demands. They are insisting on attaching all of these other identity politics. Instead of saying that, Nikki Haley is saying, shame on you, Tommy Tuberville. We're going to talk more about that because I'm done. Every day we hear about another familiar brand undermining their customers and going, quote, woke. Americans are sick and tired of having far-left propaganda jammed into every product they consume. And for years, they've dumped millions into far-left causes, and everybody had to kind of take it because you needed a cell phone and probably thought that there was no alternative. Well, there is, and that's Patriot Mobile. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, offering dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the same coverage you've been accustomed to in your area, minus the far-left propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending a message that you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, our military, veterans, and first responders. Visit PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. Get free activation today using offer code Dana and ask about their coverage guarantee while you're there. Get the same dependable service and take a stand for your values. Make the switch today. PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right, so first up, the guy who directed The Exorcist and The French Connections kicked the bucket at age 87. If he wasn't really on my radar, does it count as one of my three? For those of you who are tuning in, like, we're not being mean. My grandma has this, had this rule, like, God rest her soul. She had this rule where any kind of celebrity deaths, or actually any deaths, anybody that you know or celebrities, it has to happen in three, in groups of three. That's the rule of three. It's a completely made up Ozark thing. I don't know. It may not even be Ozark. It may just be her. But that was her rule. So now anytime something like this comes up, I'm like, wait a minute. Like, what's the standard of measure here? Over 11,000 LA workers are planning to strike, hoping to shut down the city. This includes a lot of hotel workers, hotel employees. But they're joining the actors and TV and movie writers who walked off their jobs this summer. And now City of Los Angeles workers are going to join too, beginning today, potentially grinding municipal operations to a halt for 24 hours and adding to the flurry of organized labor activity across the city and country. So it's more than 11,000 LA city employees are going to participate in a one-day strike. And that includes sanitation workers and airport employees, street services. It's SEIU, Local 721. Now, I agree with the AI thing, but if you're going to do it for a day, is that really going to, it's a day, you know, like, I don't think that that's a good idea. Netflix shelled out millions to help the ginger spare and his briefcase, no talent, according to a top Hollywood agent suitcase girlfriend, dominate Hollywood. And what do they got out of it? Nothing. The quote unquote Prince Harry and suitcase girl Meghan Markle. Apparently, they got millions of dollars, and they literally did six episodes of a stupid podcast on Spotify, to which the Gracie Award butt kissers gave her an award. I said it. And now, apparently, you know what? People in audio, they will suck up to organizations if they think they're going to get an award. I'm not one of them. And now, apparently, they're going to try to shop a book, and they're going to try to get that as a movie on Netflix now. Can they just go away? They got palaces, right? Stay with us. Folks, your financial freedom is at stake when the government thrives on creating unrelenting inflation, an astronomical debt, crippling interest rates, and market turmoil that we haven't seen in decades. And now you have an administration that wants to tax everything that you have to fund runaway entitlement spending. You should empower yourself with opportunity and the freedom to pursue success and to keep the fruits of your hard work. And if you want to protect your future, you should call a precious metals dealer that I trust, American Hartford Gold. They can show you how to protect your savings and retirement accounts by diversifying your portfolio with physical gold and silver. And all it takes to get started is a short phone call. And American Hartford Gold can have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside your IRA or 401k. They make it easy. American Hartford Gold is the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Call today and they'll give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first qualifying order. Call American Hartford Gold today at 866-887-1188. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899.
With crime and drug addiction continuing to skyrocket, the U.S. has the highest rate of single-parent households in the world. LBJ's Great Society resulted in a reliance on social welfare programs and destruction in the family unit. Is there a direct correlation? Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
But here's the issue that I think is important for Republican voters to think about. Why did we have all those mail votes? Because of Trump turned the government over to Fauci. They embraced lockdowns. They did the CARES Act, which funded mail-in ballots across the country. Donald Trump signed that bill that funded the mail ballots that all the Republicans have been so concerned about. And also with the censorship of the Hunter Biden. That was Donald Trump's FBI that was working with that. He didn't have control over his own government. So me as the nominee, we will not let them run circles around us if there is.
The Rubicon, I guess, has been crossed there for that. I was wondering when they were going to start slinging or duking it out over that. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Bottom of this first hour. It's not inaccurate. This is one of the things that, I mean, I remember seeing this tucked in there at the time. And then I went back and I was looking at a lot of this. And it was actually one of the criticisms from some conservatives at the time. You know, is this going to get taken out? Is this going to get taken out? So it's not incorrect and it makes me wonder who he had around him at the time that didn't say, whoa, hold up. We got to get in here and we got to stop this, or we have to slice and dice or something. And I mean, it's true, because he was even saying there's tons of audio when there were states that wanted to reopen. He didn't want them to reopen at the time that they were going to reopen. Look, this is an uncomfortable thing. It happened. What am I supposed to do? Ignore it for the sake of people who. Look, we've got to be honest about this stuff. It doesn't mean that you're conceding defeat in 2024, to be honest about some of this stuff. But I don't know how you expect to walk into a general election and not reconcile this. For real. I mean, y'all, we got to be honest with each other, right? It's like you gotta be the friend that tells your friend that she looked horrible in that outfit. You know what I mean? Like you gotta be honest about it. Case in point. I'll tell you this. I'm gonna pull this up. This came about today. And I'll come back to this. So there was a shakeup in the DeSantis campaign. Jenera Peck, she wasn't fired, she was moved to a different role, from what I understand, the way that I read it. But she was replaced. She was basically booted as his campaign manager and replaced with his chief of staff, James Uthmeyer. Now, I'll tell you what I know is that I've always been critical of any campaign when they run a general style campaign in a primary. Do you know what that means? It means, because in the primary, that's when you can flex your conservative cred, right? In the primary, that's when you show how, you know, you are a risk taker for the right things and you know how to take the risks. You know when to pull your punches and when not to. That is when you really flex your limited government, leave me alone policy, right? It's when you really do it. The general is when you finesse your messaging and you don't change your position on issues, but you message it in a way to appeal to independents and moderates. And that's kind of the difference. In your general campaign is a little more nuanced and a little bit more even keeled, if that makes sense. You know, it's not as dramatic. It's not as hyped up. It's okay. We're going to go. Now we're talking to the people. You got the people that are your base. Now you're going to go out to the people who are going to make up maybe the 10 points that you need to win a state. And I've always thought that the DeSantis campaign started out strong. I actually liked the spaces thing, but I like to, you know, I like to do new things and I like to see people get ahead of the ball on stuff. But I also thought that I felt like they were trying to regulate him too much. And I felt they were running a general in a primary. That's not a successful thing. Can't run a general in a primary election. Now, Peck was the campaign manager of his state campaign. So she's delivered results. Now, let's not think that this girl's not talented. I mean, she's delivered some results. As his campaign manager, they were able to create a lot of momentum. He had a lot of coattails in Florida. He dragged a lot of people across that threshold. I mean, you didn't have any Democrats. You have no Democrats for the first time in, what, ages? I think it's like pre-Civil War, something like that. that you don't have any Democrats in elected statewide office. I mean, they flip Miami, Dade, and Palm Beach counties. That's huge. So she has some successes. So don't think that she's some shrinking violet. She's not. But there's a difference in running a state campaign and a national campaign. From my experience in commentary and doing grassroots stuff, because you guys know I did a lot of street activism and I did a lot of door canvassing and I did a lot of like issue-based activism, and sometimes I'd go out for candidates too. I mean, literally, I would show up on somebody's front porch, which is kind of funny sometimes, or not. But one of the things that I have learned is that a lot of people that are very, very involved in state by state, when it comes to the national level, very few perform as successfully as required at that level because it is a different type of game. Now, that is not a dunk on the skills of the person. It's just different. A lot of them think, oh my gosh, it's national, I got to play it safer. Yes and no. Because in a primary, that's when you don't play it safe. The primary is when you take the risks. The primary is when you're like, you know what? Look, this is how limited government I am, damn it. Leave me alone. Now, something like that in a general, maybe it wouldn't fly as well. So you finesse it a little bit. Yes, I like to be left alone by a big government that wants to tell me what kind of light bulb to have. I mean, do you want me telling you what kind of... See, you finesse it a little bit. A lot of people that are that do state stuff, they get a little too safe in a primary and a national. So you don't want to run a general in a primary. And I felt like that's what was happening. And I felt like some of the strengths had been muted. Some of the campaign strengths had been muted in the last couple of months. So I think this is a good move. She's not leaving the campaign. She's just in a different role. And I think this is a good move. Now, I don't know about this guy. I don't know if he's got campaign experience, admittedly. So I don't know what to expect from him. But I know that he's got some really good people around him. And I know that some of the donors, DeSantis donors, were wanting him to be a little bit more aggressive. Whereas I think the campaign was saying, let's play it a little safer. So that looks like it looks basically it looks like the brass knuckles are coming out. And it's not, and that's kind of, that's, he's not trying to be anything. That's just what he is. He's a polite bull in a china shop. He's very polite. After he breaks a dish, he'll say, excuse me, I'm so sorry about that. So it'll be interesting to see what effect this has on the campaign. So my point in bringing this up is that you got to be honest about a campaign's deficiencies and strengths. And one of the things that Trump, and this is not a declaration on whether you like him or love him. There's too much video of him with his own mouth saying stuff about how states shouldn't reopen too early. They need to stay shut down. Talking about mail-in ballots when this was actually funded. I mean, and that is a true thing. You can't deny when you signed a bill that's funding mail-in ballots, you can't deny it. So this is, you know, what this is one of the things that you have to reconcile. And I'm going to talk more specifically about that here coming up, just so you have a little insight as to what actually triggered that funding and have some background into it. But this Tuberville thing that we talked about before headlines, and I brought this up because I get aggravated at Republicans. I get aggravated because, you know, apparently they're angry at Tommy Tuberville because he's not going to allow the approval of every military nominee immediately. Because they act like he's the one who threw the identity politics in. They act like he is the one that decided to demand taxpayer-funded abortion on demand as birth control, and that's exactly what it is. Anyone else who's telling you otherwise is a lying liar. They act like military personnel don't understand that readiness begins with the individual. And so that's Tuberville's taking a principled stance, and people like Nikki Haley, I don't get this, are coming out, and they're saying shameful. And NBC is celebrating this. They're like, look, Republicans are fighting over abortion. And you know what they're doing? Nikki Haley's campaign just gave the media and gave the left a read that they can use to beat the GOP with and say, look how crazy you are on abortion. Even, look, Nikki Haley, who is a woman Republican, is disagreeing with you. I couldn't have cast this better if I was working for the left. You get a female Republican bashing a male Republican because he's standing for, standing A for life, but also standing against using your damn taxpayer dollars during a time of Bidenomics recession to fund taxpayer-funded abortion on demand for birth control, which is what it is. Why suddenly, is Nikki Haley still a Republican? Is she for taxpayer-funded abortion on demand as birth control? I mean, you know, go ahead and maybe your kids could go without the breakfast cereal that they want. Or maybe you just, you know, maybe you don't take, you know, cut a few days off of that family vacation that you've been saving some money for. Damn it. Republicans like Nikki Haley want to make sure that they can virtue signal with your tax dollars by paying for people's abortion as recreational birth control. Isn't that a sacrifice you should make? That's what they're saying. That's not a. I don't want anyone who's that stupid on strategy and messaging anywhere near elected office, much less the White House. I mean, this is, you have Democrats holding up military promotions and they're shaming Tommy Tuberville. That is an insane, illogical flex. Who the hell is advising Nikki Haley's campaign? Now, they're going to sit here and be like, oh, well, DeSantis switched this. And they'll go, oh, Trump. But what? Who comes out like this? If your first response is to blast an ally or a potential ally for opposing something that you're supposed to oppose policy-wise anyway as a supposed constitutionalist, then you're tone deaf, you're strategy deficient, and you should be disqualified from serious consideration for anything. You're playing checkers. And you're getting played by people playing chess. So I find that shameful. I find the fact that she's joining with the media and the left and giving people, giving the left a cudgel that they can use twofold to go after Tuberville and also to allow Democrats to rob the narrative of the economy from taking precedent in people's minds and supplanting it with abortion. She's aiding the left in talking about abortion again. That is not a good strategy. It's not a smart move. But she's flexing because she's trying to get attention. She's trying to set herself up. Look at me, I'm being a leader. If you're going to be a leader on something, you're going to walk that far out on the limb, I'll be damned. Be smart about it. Because this just makes Tuberville look even more principled in my mind. I hope he holds. And she says, you know, these military people, and she says, you know, my husband who's serving overseas, you know, the idea they're looking back and seeing this. Girlfriend, I got to tell you, that ain't Tommy Tuberville that did it. That is Joe Biden and Democrats who added all this stuff in. So you're telling me that we should go ahead and bend a knee to whatever the hell they want just so we can go along with getting along for the optic of getting something passed? We should just spend whatever taxpayer dollars on whatever the hell identity politic you want? Is that what you're telling me? Because I've never seen such a surrender before. That's what that is. It's a surrender. Get her out of the damn primary. That's embarrassing. That is an embarrassing cell phone. And if I sound harsh about it, you're damn well right I am. Here's why. Because 2024 is it. That's it, folks. What do you think is going to happen? You get another 4 years of Joe Biden and Democrats. What are they going to cement? Well, hell, they'll write all the governing language for AI. You're screwed there. ESG, you're screwed there. Who knows what war he's going to get us involved in? We're all screwed there. If you got kids that are draft age, you might want to prepare them. I'm not joking. That's what you're looking at. I don't have time for this nonsense. I don't have time to have I'm going to be frank with you about it. I don't have time to have a phallus measuring contest with some ego worshiping politicians. And I don't have the time to sit here and entertain the fantasies of somebody who wants to sit here and flex over something so stupid and comment something from the left like this. It is infuriating because we're wasting all our time on this stuff. I haven't gotten this mad in a while. But I find this embarrassing and shameful. And I've defended her on stuff before. I ain't going to defend her again. When the media slaps your ass next time, you're on your own. You court this type of media bias? You court this type of asinine strategy? You deserve to get hit by it. And when you do, don't come running. I'm going to be like Rorschach from The Watchmen, and they'll cry out, save me, and I'll say no.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Dusty, it wasn't easy. People counted you out saying you're past your prime. Hell, I know something about that.
Yeah, you would, wouldn't you? I think we all do. Goodness, it's the President of the United States here. All right, so it is SCOTUS season, as you know, and one of the things with this is that it's like the ghost gun case. And looking at this, it was a 5-4. So, and I'm gonna explain what this means, because this is not actually over. So don't, I will explain what this means coming up. But apparently the ghost gun, the regulation regarding build your ghost gun, the ATF, the fight against the ATF. So the request to keep the regulation from the administration against ghost guns has been kept in place by a 5-4 vote by the Supreme Court. There's a reason why, and I'm going to explain why this is not over next.
Darren White is with the NAACP Oakland branch, which penned an open letter to their city blaming failed leadership, the defund the police movement, and anti-police rhetoric for creating a heyday for Oakland criminals.
We're not trying to say, you know, mass incarceration and arrest everyone. We want the people that are out here committing these violent crimes arrested and charged.
Do we need more cops on the street?
Yes, we do need more. Every community needs police. Mm.
So it kind of sounds like, I guess that's the end of the whole defund the police thing now. Officially, can we say it's been put to bed? That's the end of it. It's done. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. It's because people realize that, you know, you kind of have to have, you know, you need to be able to have police that enforce the existing laws. Good heavens. So welcome back to the show. You can listen coast to coast. You can watch the simulcast. Channel 347, DirecTV, YouTube, Facebook as well. Always good discussion at YouTube that goes along with the live program. All right, so that was the Oakland NAACP denouncing defund the police. And they're saying, look, you know, you created all of these issues because it's all restorative justice. And I hope it gets to that point where people acknowledge that, because that's what's driving all of this. This idea that if you coddle criminals and you, you know, baby them, then it's going to make, that's because they didn't get enough love in life, and that's going to make it all go away. That's just actually how you get the crime rates that you have now. That's how you get body counts. I mean, you know, that's it. And so more and more leaders are coming out and saying, yeah, we can't, this isn't going to work. We can't abide by this. It's getting people killed. We have to have law and order. I mean, that's a community agreement. It's not a big government thing. It's a community agreement. So it's not just him. And this is, that's the Oakland NAACP. You also have, and this is Audio Soundbite 12. It's the New York City Mayor Eric Adams. So remember, we've had these stories where you have, I don't want to say youth necessarily, because some of them are like early 20s. I don't call somebody who's 20, 21, 22 a teenager anymore. You are literally a young adult. You're an adult. So I think it's important to remember that there are a lot of those upper ages that are in this too. But it all starts, you know, when people are teenagers and they're out running around and they're being crazy and they're committing crimes and they're looting or whatever. And so Eric Adams, he's saying that, sometimes he says stuff I agree with, sometimes he doesn't. This is one of the things that I agree with. He says youth crime, listen to this, is a parenting issue. Audio Summit 12.
And that's a great question, because of what you're seeing that is happening to our youth in this country, in general, but specifically here in New York City, is something that we should all be alarmed about. We saw it yesterday down at Union Square. This is not a policing issue. This is a parenting issue. Mm-hmm. And we need to be clear on that. The police is the response after an incident happened.
Well, he's right. It comes down to a parenting issue. How do parents not know? That's the thing. You just don't care. If your teenager's running around doing some of the stuff that we've been seeing, like the teenage girls that were attacking the Asian family on the train, And then they went at the lady that was videotaping it. I can't even, oh my gosh, if that was my child. Jiminy Christmas. But everyone looks at, I think that today, I don't know, do some parents look as though at their kids if they misbehave and then they get in trouble for it? It's like they treat it like it's a personal affront to them. Instead of focusing on doing a good job as a parent, they're navel gazing. I don't know how else to describe it. I mean, this it's wild, and there's always excuses given. Everybody's behavior is excused. We got to excuse somebody's behavior. Like with the situation with Daniel Penny. I mean, good heavens, how long did people know that that guy was a problem? That he was violent? That he had all these priors? He had a warrant out for his arrest. He's punching old ladies in the face. And they waited until what? When you FA for so long, someday you're going to go up against someone and they're going to make you find out. You mess around and mess around, they're going to make you find out. That's what happens. And then our society is trying to mainstream the idea that self-defense is bad and that the people who stick up for others are bad too. Like in the case of Daniel Penny. He did everything right. But he's the bad guy because apparently everyone else was supposed to allow themselves to be the victims. Restorative justice elevates the criminal above the victim. They consider the well-being of the criminal and disregard that of the victim. That is the heart of restorative justice. And the justification that they give for it is, well, maybe the victim had a you know, hard life or this or that. There's always an excuse, which I think betrays the innermost nature of that ideology. Because they think that if you're poor, that you're prone to crime. That if you've had a tough life, you're prone to crime. There's something wrong with you. That's ultimately what that ideology says without saying it. They say it with their actions. They say it with this idea that you have to be coddled all your life because you're more prone to this. Do you not realize the ultimate class warfare that this ideology promotes? And people play into it. And you got this situation of this guy who is in San Francisco. I'm going to pull my story up here. This individual, this man who is in San Francisco, he gets somehow, there's a friend of his who's being arrested. And as he is being arrested, this guy steps up and he's, you know, given the cops all kinds of problems and all this stuff. And then ultimately, because they have their, apparently there was closed circuit television footage. And then, and Julio Rosas has had some of the video on this. They had closed circuit television footage, and then they also had the police body cam. And so the guy, you know, his name's Ryan Bluford. He intervened in an arrest. He got super aggressive towards police. They were arresting somebody who literally had a warrant out, and he's in their face, cussing and slurring them, saying, "Uncuff him, get out of my hood, I'll blink you up right here." And then he pulls a gun out of his pants and points it at the cops. Well, guess what happens? He got shot because he pointed a gun at the cops as he was intervening and being incredibly aggressive towards police, arresting somebody that had a warrant. It's in San Francisco. The gun that he pointed at them, all of this was caught on video. It's all on video. And then I want to play, they had family and friends come out. I want to play what this one guy said because this is how he thinks that police should have responded to this. Listen, this is audio somebody three.
Family members say they'd like to see police use tactics other than deadly force.
I really want to learn what de-escalation strategies they employ. Out of all of those police officers, I wish one of them would have just took the time to say, "Hey, let's talk."
What the hell do you think was going on, dude? Were you too busy putting your wig on that you didn't watch the actual footage? If you were watching the simulcast, that makes sense. Because there was like 2 minutes of video footage where they're trying to chill this guy out and he's aggressive, getting in cops' faces, trying to intervene while they're arresting this guy that has a warrant on him. And he's getting in their faces and keeps grabbing towards his pants, acting like he's got a gun concealed. And then when he pulls it out, waves it, points it right at the cops, and he gets shot. What did you think all of the footage of that leading up to that point was? He's intervening and they're telling him to stop, back away, and he doesn't do that. What the hell part of that did you miss?
Well, I just wish that they would have used de-escalation.
The de-escalation was them saying, stop, this guy's got a warrant, we're arresting him, stop intervening, stop being aggressive, you know, stop doing this. Just, you know, they were chill up until the point this dude pointed a gun at them. Guess what? You point a gun at anybody, as they're carrying, you're going to get popped. Again, that is, you're going to mess around and then you're going to find out. And then the family is like, and this individual that they, this guy that they interviewed, well, you know, they should have, you know, they shouldn't have used lethal tactics. So what, you expect the cops to get shot? How many more cops we got to sacrifice so you can feel good about yourself, you know, not doing, you know, damn thing, going back home? Well, at least the criminal didn't get shot. How many more cops got to pay with their lives so you can pretend that you're a good person and you can virtue signal about this nonsense? How many cops got to die? How many cops' kids got to go through life without having a parent? I'm so tired of this nonsense. Maybe get off your fat ass and tell your family member to stop acting like a thug. Maybe intervene when you see your family member acting like a thug and doing stuff that criminals do. I don't know. Like, maybe you should use your de-escalation tactics and get involved and say, like, maybe can we not do this? Why does that never come up at that particular point? Oh, no, it's the cops' fault. Anything to avoid any kind of accountability. Anything to say, yes, my family member was in the wrong. They should not have been aggressively intervening in the arrest of another repeat offender that had a warrant out. They should not have gotten in police face. They should not have threatened police. And then they also should not have pulled out a gun and pointed it at police. What are police supposed to, I mean, how many bullets do they got to take? Wait a minute, pop, could we talk this out? Pop, pop, how many, could we just talk about it? Are you out of your mind? Has he got to go through the whole mag? Like, how long, how many bullets should the cop take? Kane, you need to read what you just wrote in Slack.
Well, if you can't take a slug, don't be a thug. It's pretty simple.
Schoolhouse Rock? All right, we got a lot more on the way, too.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So a quick note on this case, and we're going to talk more about this after headlines. The Supreme Court had frozen a lower court order that had blocked the Biden administration's restrictions. It's that ATF, like the receiver and the brace roll and the ghost gun restrictions. It was a 5-4 split. We're going to dive into it because I'm just reading. This is just me reading it on break, and that it looks like a provisional ruling. There's no opinion. It's just an order. So we're going to talk more about that here coming up, what that means and what you can expect. A scientist wants to catch an asteroid and block out the sun with it. Can I block him out with the rock, too? I'm just asking for myself because I like the sun. It's the latest demented idea that is being pushed to stop the world ending from what they call climate Armageddon. Yeah, let's just catch an asteroid. You know what we could do is make a big giant net, Kane, from all the stupid face masks that everybody wanted us to wear. And then, you know, we could like slingshot it over to the sun. Right? Shouldn't that work?
Or a giant umbrella.
Actually, that was funny that you say that because that's one of the things that they had suggested. This is actually from the Daily Mail. I can't even believe it. So it's a real thing. It's a bizarre mission that some moron from the University of Hawaii is arguing. He says it's just an enormous solar shield and we'll block out the sun with this asteroid that has this, like, basically an umbrella on it. That's the dumbest thing ever. Just stop. We're actually going into like a cooling period, but, you know, whatever, science and stuff. Flights are being canceled. There's severe storms stretching from Alabama to New York. I saw all the nadir warnings coming in there from Virginia. Everybody was losing their minds. There was like a 4-paragraph thing from the weather people that came out and said, don't look at the weather. Don't look at the clouds. Don't get near your windows. Keep this close. Keep that close. Don't touch nothing. It was very interesting. They don't get like the tornadoes and the tornadic activity there. Also, Washington, D.C. I don't want to see that. I don't want to see some of the monuments be turned into weapons spinning in the sky and tossed all over the place. 57 swimmers fell sick and, they got the runs at the World Triathlon Championship in Sunderland. This is from The Guardian. Athletes competing on a stretch of UK coastline where reduced water quality at a center of dispute over sewage discharges. 57, it's a British thing, so I got to read it like that. 57 people fell ill after they competed in this event, and apparently it was at a polluted beach. Sunderland's Blue Flag Roker Beach The UK Health Security Agency said they're testing samples from people who were ill. Well, let's see if there's sewage discharges anywhere near there. I got an idea. I'm not a betting person, Kane, but I'm just saying. So now apparently every startup is an AI company now, per MSN. So they were talking about how the OpenAI's ChatGPT, it's on pace to hit 100 million monthly users in just three months after it was released publicly. That beats TikTok, which took 9 months, Instagram, 2.5 years, to hit that exact same milestone. So they said in 20 years following the internet space, there's never been a faster ramp in a consumer internet app. And so what this has done, because of all the coverage and all of this, the entire tech industry, which has been struggling with a downturn, now there's all these startups and all of this generative AI. It's expensive to build and run. Everybody is adding some kind of AI tech to their startup to attract attention from venture capitalists, they're saying. And so now it's getting oversaturated. It is. So I don't know if that's, I don't know. Homeowners Association board were arrested over $2 million stolen from residents after 300% fee hike passed in secret. Homeowners Associations, which is where the Karens go to die. The one of Florida's largest homeowner associations, one allegedly stole $2 million from residents, according to Miami-Dade. And I sometimes think they're good. Sometimes I think that they're little tyrants. And if they make somebody tear down some sick kid's treehouse or something, it's not bothering you. You're just, just being a brat. So, this is very interesting. And also the last thing, I got one from I wanted to make sure I get into it. So they said that Elon Musk bragged about lifting 45-pound weights on Friday. Now he's saying he's got to get an MRI on his neck and back, and he's getting ready for his cage match with Zuck. Although he did say he's going to do the walrus, just lay on him and just suffocate him. So that's a possibility too. We're going to look at the SCOTUS ruling. We got a lot more as well coming up. Stick with us.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
If your little boy comes to you and says, "Daddy, I want to be a girl," and you just let him rock with that, you just let him.
Right.
He's five.
Right. And where did he get that
from?
If
you let this five-year-old boy decide to eat candy all day, he's going to do that.
Exactly.
Like, when did it become a good idea to let a five-year-old, let a six-year-old, let a 12-year-old make a life-changing decision for themselves?
Right.
When did that happen?
Right.
Like,
And, he's right. Oh, my goodness. That is Neo, who is being, they were trying to cancel him. And I got to talk about all the articles that they've written and how they're actually incorrect. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Bottom of this second hour. So, and if you are unfamiliar with him, he's, singer, songwriter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So he was giving an interview and he was talking about gender identity and saying that, you can't have kids go out here, at this age and do all of this stuff like this and decide to, get involved in some of this irreversible mutilation, etc. And then everyone started going after him, right? And so then the headlines, and this is what I pulled up, because just let me tell you what this came up on his Twitter account. Somebody tweeted for him on his Twitter account, and they had said, I'm so sorry, it was the whole I'm so sorry, et cetera, et cetera. I shouldn't have said what I said, blah, blah, blah. And it was just one of the standard kind of apologies that had been written. It was an image and it wasn't a tweet. It was an image with words on it. And the tweet goes, "I'd like to express my deepest apologies. I'd like to express, to anyone I may have hurt with my comments on parenting and gender identity, blah, blah, blah. I plan to better educate myself, et cetera, et cetera." Well, there is a reader note on this tweet now. Because he has doubled down on it. He didn't write this. So listen to this. Audio soundbite 15. He put this on Instagram, I guess, where the publicist couldn't post for him. Listen.
"What's going on, loved ones? This is Neo. All right, listen. I normally don't give too much of a damn about what y'all think about what I do, what y'all have to say about what I say, whatever. I normally don't care because, like I said, opinions ain't special. Everybody got one. However, this is something I feel very strongly on, and I need y'all to hear this from the horse's mouth, not the publicist's computer. So check this out.
Oh.
First and foremost, I do not apologize for having an opinion on this matter. I am a 43-year-old heterosexual man raising 5 boys and 2 girls, okay? That's my reality. Now, if my opinion offended somebody, yeah, sure, I apologize for you being offended because that wasn't my intention. My intention is never to offend anybody. However, I'm entitled to feel how I feel. I'm absolutely entitled to feel how I feel the same way you are entitled to feel how you feel. I ain't asked nobody to follow me. I ain't asked nobody to agree with me. I was asked a question, and I answered the damn question, okay? I have no beef with the LGBTQIA plus community whatsoever. I ain't got no beef with y'all. Do whatever the hell it is you want to do. Do what you want to do with your kids. However, somebody asked my opinion on this matter, and this is how I feel. I will never be okay with allowing a child to make a decision that detrimental to their life. I will never be okay with that. I don't care. I definitely plan to educate myself a little bit more on this matter. However, I doubt that there's any book anywhere or any opinion that somebody's going to tell me that's going to make me okay with letting a child make a decision like that.
Ooh, but did you see how the media, that they came out with that tweet? And all, so everybody, this was literally a couple of hours ago. Rolling Stone says, Rolling Stone was saying, oh no, he apologizes for gender identity. Then they had to update it to say, oh, well, actually, no, he walked back his apology. They were so excited to run out there. Oh, look, he was shut up. Everybody from Advocate, CNN, Daily Beast, all these people ran with this whole thing. Oh, he's apologizing. Like we won, we got it. And then now they're all having to. I love it. It is so great. But you know, he's saying, look, this is my opinion. You're not going to cancel me for this. He's a parent. And he's right. He is absolutely right. It is so. I've been saying this for years. You don't bend a knee to the rage mob because it's pointless. I wrote a book about it. The rage mob is not out for reconciliation. They are not out for understanding. They are not out for context. They are out to destroy any dissent. Because dissent is interpreted to be a challenge. And a challenge means that you are either rejecting or challenge. Well, you're outright rejecting their authority. They want total ideological authority. That's what this is about. And when you challenge their viewpoints, you are challenging not their opinion, you're challenging their authority. And that cannot stand. That is why you have cancellation. That is why you have the rage mob. They are not interested in your apology, so it's pointless to apologize. It's pointless to apologize entirely. If it was about that, then I think that there would be a lot more reconciliation and understanding and grace and maybe some more kindness. But it's not about that. It is about utter destruction of any dissent because that is a challenge. Dissent means you are rejecting their authority. And they want total authority, not just in government, but total ideological authority. And Kane, what do you call that?
That's fascism.
Thank you, sir.
Fascism.
Yes. So good for him. Good for him on this. I'm pleased. All right, a couple of quick things because we still got more here. Actually, you know what? Let me touch on this story first, and then I'm gonna explain this. I said SCOTUS ruling as we were going to break. It's actually an order, not a ruling. But you know, because we're talking about some of the culture stuff. Where is this crazy story? I was actually going to bring this up with you yesterday, but we ran out of time, which probably is for the better because this is one of those I just don't know how you. New York Post: transgender woman demands ex-boyfriend return her testicles from his fridge. So again, a transgender woman demands that an ex-boyfriend give him back his testicles from his fridge. The headline pronoun is her. It's him. It's a dude who cosplays as a chick who apparently cut off his beans. And, the ex literally kept them in a mason jar in the fridge next to the eggs. That is literally the Detroit News. I'm sick. That's no. Oh, yeah, the Detroit News reported that the man goes by the name of Brianna Kingsley, and he filed an affidavit saying that his ex, William Wojciechowski, retains possession of his surgically extracted beans, preserved in a mason jar kept in the fridge next to the eggs. That's literally what it says. Pontiac, Michigan. And the ex asserts that his ex, the man who identifies as, who cosplays as a woman, quote, picked up all her possessions when we broke up. He took everything he wanted. I'm not saying that pronoun. He took everything he wanted. Okay, so now the guy who is just a dude, says that the dude who's cosplaying as a woman has been harassing them since their breakup 8 months ago. And it's a small, two-page small claims affidavit. And so he says this is just intimidation. Sounds like he's nuts. But see what I did that? I mean, he was asked if he planned to fight to keep his ex's body parts. He goes, I don't owe him anything. So.
But why in the fridge?
I mean, he didn't dispute that. I mean, the first thing I think I would have done if I was that dude would have, especially if it wasn't true, I would have been like, that's nuts. That his nuts are in my fridge next to the eggs. Because that didn't happen. I mean, if it wasn't true, but he didn't say that. He's just like, oh yeah. He calls him her. Golly, see, I cannot stand this, the word Olympics. He calls the dude her. But he says the dude's been harassing him. Oh my gosh. Wait, let me put this out here. It's a surprise that he's crazy. I mean, your first sign wasn't that he cut his balls off and put them in the fridge next to your eggs? That wasn't the first sign? You know what I mean? Like, I would have been like, you seem crazy. Nuts, really. Juan desperately wants to know, what if they grabbed the wrong thing in the fridge?
I just don't know. Yeah. What are you saving them for? Like, what is the whole
Easter egg dying? I don't know. No. Like,
no,
I don't know. I don't know what you say. I don't know. It's weird. You're trying to make sense out of someone who is crazy enough to cut their nuts off and put it in the fridge next to the eggs. There is no sense making out of this.
It's horrible. I'm trying to make sense of this.
There's none.
You got some beach ball sized lady nuts on you coming in all kamikaze like that.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, there is none. There's no sense to be made. None. Dude. I don't even know, man. I don't even know. Don't even know. So I just. I am without words right now.
Sounds like a hoarder. A little bit of a hoarder. Like, what are you going to do? Literally with that. What are you going to do with his huevos?
What?
His eggs.
I know, but they're not that, though.
No, they're not, but they're commonly called that.
Oh, gosh. I'm so sorry for everybody who's eating lunch. Okay, we're moving on. All right, a quick thing on the Supreme Court, the SCOTUS thing. The 5-4 the order came from SCOTUS 5-4 to pause a lower court's ruling. So it had suspended this Biden rule. And you had four conservative justices, Thomas, Alito, Gorsuch, and Kavanaugh. They would have temporarily blocked enforcement of the rule. And this rule has to do with the receivers and basically what is a gun. And it's a lot of people say, oh, it's ghost gun. The whole ghost gun thing, by the way, is so stupid. It's hobbyist. There's literally no evidence to support the claim that they are driving crime or even predominantly used in crimes committed. It's kind of expensive, you know, to like mill stuff out and all that, good things. But you have to put a serial number on a firearm if you're making it at home anyway and you plan to sell it. It has to be serialized. All of this stuff is already federally regulated. So that's an actual thing. The other issue, and again, it's all federally regulated. So if you are creating a firearm at home and you use it in a crime, it's illegal because it's already federally regulated. If you are a prohibited possessor, you can't do that in your state of residence. If you are a prohibited possessor, you can't make one. If you are a prohibited possessor, you can't own one. If you are a prohibited possessor, you can't buy one. All of this is federally regulated because there is a federal penalty that exists if you violate the rule, which is called a law. So, and yeah, committing crimes as K-notes is also illegal. So the thing is that the idea of, you know, what is a receiver, what is, you know, all different, for those who don't know, like different gun parts, right, that actually aren't guns by themselves. And they're going after these kids and they're going after ghost guns and all. They call it a ghost gun because they claim it's untraceable, which, again, that's still federally regulated. Anyway, long story short. I've been looking at just like a little bit of this on break, and I don't think, I mean, essentially they revived the administration's rule against it, but it's just an order. So that's not like there's no opinion, et cetera. You did have Roberts, and then you also had Amy Coney Barrett who made the determination on staying this order with Roberts and the others. And I think it might be because it's a provisional order, meaning the regulation is in place while the legal challenge to this rule moves forward in the courts. So it could be predicated upon that. But it grants the ATF's request for a stay of this judge's ruling that vacates the rule against the 80% frames, receivers, whatever. And so the rule is in place until the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals hears the appeal of O'Connor's ruling. And so everybody expects them to lose their appeal because they're exceeding their authority when this should be a congressional manner, ultimately. And everyone thinks that they're going to use it in the Fifth Circuit. And then it would go back to SCOTUS. And that's the one thing I was pulling this up where it's not denying that essentially that it would hear it again, that if it came up that it wouldn't hear it. So, you know, that's ultimately what it is. But you have to go through this legal purgatory period while it goes through the court system up to Fifth Circuit. So that's what this means. I'll have a little thing about this later in the email newsletter if you are subscribed to that, if you sign up for it.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Mm-hmm. So a Florida man is charged with flooding an emergency room after attacking a nurse and stripping. The man in Southwest Florida was charged with flooding the hospital's emergency room. This is in Naples. He attacked the nurse, stripped off his clothes. Authorities said the 53-year-old became agitated while waiting in a waiting room at the North Collier Hospital in Naples, Florida, on Saturday. Collier County Sheriff's Office said that he barged into the emergency room, pushed a patient, then pushed a nurse. It says pushed a nurse in the head. Pushed her in the head? How do you? Okay. After the hospital staff got him into a room in an effort to keep him from disturbing others, he took off his clothes, pulled a high-pressure water pipe from the wall, and then that caused the hospital's emergency rooms to flood, causing tens of thousands of dollars of damage. The deputies subdued him using a taser because he threatened to kill him. And he was taken into custody. So he's facing a single charge of aggravated battery, 4 charges of criminal mischief. There you go. Good heavens. I don't know what he was on or I don't know. A Florida man was arrested for stealing a truck because he needed a ride. You know, sometimes that just happens. This is in Port St. Lucie. The Port St. Lucie police posted it on their Facebook page. They said that I was at a bar on Gatlin Boulevard and things were getting a little crazy. And William Colon is his name. Okay. Literally Colon. He saw some keys. Apparently somebody lost their keys or left them on a table. He grabbed the keys, made a beeline for the exit, stole the truck that they belonged to. And then when police pulled him over for a stolen truck, he was asking why he was pulled over, and then he goes, well, you know, I didn't have a ride home, so I stole the truck. I didn't want to have to pay for an Uber. He did not want to have to pay for an Uber. So he's going to now pay with time in jail and a charge of Grand Theft Auto. Good heavens. Stick with us. We got our third hour on the way.
I start talking about Trump. I get too flustered in my head, and that I want to say, there's too many things I want to say at once. So sometimes I start talking I'm not able to convey the message the right way because I just get flustered and frustrated watching him play to his base that thinks that he cares about them, and it's actually the people that he cares about the least. If you're talking about his core being, you know, a majority white middle class
What I don't understand is how in the f- do you feel like you relate to a billionaire?
You know what? I would take him a lot more seriously if he didn't look like a late 50s-year-old woman that went a little too crazy with fillers at the injectables party, you know, that the other, you know, boxed wine moms were having. Is that too harsh? Is it, though? I mean, huh?
Pretty accurate.
Seems accurate to me. I mean, he got like weird and his beard got weird, right? It's like it's like somebody drew it on. I don't know. He got weird and his face doesn't move. Yeah. It's weird. I don't know. Am I being harsh? I know dudes that get up there like that get testy with stuff, you know. I don't know. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash here. I felt like being mean for a second. Come on. I try so hard to be good, y'all. Give me a second. All right, just indulge me. He not doing anything good anyway. Dana Lash here with you. You can listen coast to coast. You can also stream the simulcast of the radio program on channel 347, DirecTV, YouTube, Facebook, all that good stuff. So, I mean, he's a performer, right? He's putting on a performance. I think politics is part of the performance for that. Here's something that's a little weird when we talk about performers and politics. Talking about Eminem. Will the real Vivek Ramaswamy please stand up? Because I don't know where he is actually on one issue or another. Now, here's why I say this. So he came out with this... Well, I think it was like a speech that he was giving, not so much like a policy proposal, right? It was weird. And he came out and was slamming, I'm going to pull this up. He was slamming Juneteenth. Now, I get people got some criticism about Juneteenth because they think it's too close to 4th of July or whatever and something like that. I like the fact that, you know, we take a minute to celebrate that Republicans stop Democrats from enslaving people. I think that's an important thing to acknowledge. Republicans said, we're done with Democrats and their slavery and enslaving people. Stop it. And a lot of people gave their lives for that. And so I don't think that it's a bad thing to acknowledge that. But Ramaswamy came out and he said, Juneteenth is a useless holiday. Oh, it's useless. He said, I would cancel it. He goes, cancel that and the other useless ones. But I'm confused, Kane, because literally like 2 months ago, audio soundbite 4, literally 2 months ago,
not years,
months, 8 weeks, he said this. Listen.
We live in a beautiful country. America is blessed with natural beauty in every sense. But the thing that makes our country beautiful actually isn't even the scenery. It's the vision of what this place can be. The place where no matter who you are or where your parents came from.
Okay.
Or what your skin color is.
Oh gosh, get to it.
That you still get ahead in this country based on your own hard work.
Oh my gosh.
Your own commitment, your own dedication.
Mm-hmm.
That's the American dream that I lived. It's the American dream we want to give to the next generation. That's what we celebrate on Juneteenth. We don't just look back and flog ourselves. That's beside the point.
What
we celebrate is how far we've come.
Wait, whoa.
And as a first generation American myself,
so he's celebrating Juneteenth here.
I'm proud of it. Happy Juneteenth, everybody.
Happy Juneteenth.
But wait a minute. He's literally, and the audio quality is not awesome, but he's on video saying he said Juneteenth should be canceled. So where does he now? Look, here's the thing. I am for. Don't I can hear some of you. Wait, hold up. Shh. I'm gonna how to basic shh you. Shh. Shh. I understand what some of you are saying. You're like, but Dana, people can change their mind on things. You know, people can change their mind. They can modify their positions. Okay, I totally get that. I totally give you that. Except within an 8-week span, he went from happy Juneteenth, everyone, to blank Juneteenth, cancel it. I mean, that's kind of a big, yeah, that's a lot of ground to cover there without telling people why you changed. How did that change? Like, for instance, the same way that you would, you know, back in 2021, blast Trump and say, oh my gosh, what he did was wrong and abhorrent January 6th. That's all his fault, plain and simple. I've said it before. It's a dark day for democracy. He's got a victimhood complex. He's the, what did he call him? What's that chick that lost everything in Georgia? Stacey Abrams?
Oh, yeah.
He's like the Stacey Abrams of the Republican Party. And then going to, well, he didn't do anything wrong on January 6th. I mean, because Vivek Ramaswamy, we talked about that just last week. He did that too. So here's another, I'm confused. Or how he rails against Big Pharma while working with Big Pharma to come up with a tracking system for Big Pharma. Do you see what I'm saying? That's why I felt appropriate to have Eminem and Vivek in this segment, because will the real Vivek stand up? I don't know which way to go. I mean, there's a lot of these things. And again, I'm all for people changing positions, but when you're, it looks like you're changing positions based on how it best suits you during a political contest. That seems, not to sound like Charlie Day, but that seems like a little pandering, doesn't it? I'm just wondering. I mean, going against wokery while literally in a company that you have, or a nonprofit arm that literally has DEI in it. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff out there that I'm seeing that I'm like, okay, well, you can't be on both sides of these issues. You got to pick one of them. Is it the one from a few weeks ago, or is it the one now? Where do you stand on? I mean, do you like Juneteenth? Do you hate it? Do you think Trump is responsible for J6 or not? Are you against Big Pharma, or do you want to help them track stuff, the shots and everything, with your database? Are you against wokery and DEI and ESG, or do you think you should have a DEI, ESG, wokery department within your company? I mean, what is happening? Is it wrong to, don't you ask, you're mean, Dana, you're so mean, why are you such a hater? You simp. I don't know, it's usually like what it is, isn't it? You got a couple of those drive-bys out there. I mean, you can't blame me for being confused, can you, Kane?
Yeah, not at all. When I get confused, I also ask questions. It's weird.
You simp, how dare you ask questions? And that's kind of how it goes like that, right? Right. We'll pretend it's Twitter. You cuck!
Very scientific to ask questions.
Yeah, you know, because it's not, no, we can't ask science, though. I mean, we live in a society where I literally had a story today about some dude who cut off his beans and stored them in his ex's fridge next to the eggs. Yeah, that happened. I'm just saying, I got some questions about this. You know, we're in a society where the story that I am most entertained about this week or by is the Alabama riverboat brawl. Now, there's a number of ways you could look at this. You could look at this like, and I've had family members get mad at me. You shouldn't say these things. Like, this is, everybody's family does stuff like this. See, the Bidens are in the White House. Nobody can say nothing, okay? They've got cocaine laying around the White House. Nobody gets to pass judgment on this. All right? Who among us haven't taken a flip-flop off a time again, okay? Who among us? So, I don't know if you saw this. It's the this is a movie. It is the Alabama boat brawl. Where is Dana White? Oh my gosh. There's like, or the slap fight people, which I may or may have watched. I mean, may or may not. Wait a minute. That didn't work right. So this happened over the weekend. So apparently, I don't even know who started this. There were some pontoon boats there. And one of the captains at the Alabama boat brawl, that's a lot to say, it took out between some pleasure craft boaters. So you had some, and the reason that everybody was talking about it is because it was white and black. So they had white pleasure craft boaters, and there were some black boaters, and then some black staff from a river boat. And then some of the crew members are pressing charges. So Jim Cottrell, who is the captain of the Harriet II, claimed he and his crew, and because the progressives think this is important, he's white, they said they had previous issues with the pleasure craft boaters before violence erupted Saturday. So he said that they were trying to dock the vessel, but they couldn't because the pontoon boat had already taken the spot. And they said that apparently the people on that pontoon boat apparently even stole one of their golf carts before. And he goes, one point I do want to make, it's not a white or black, or not a black and white thing. And he said that the crew was upset about these idiots. It's the same group that comes from every year. He said, we've had trouble with them in the past, but like little jokey things. And he said, so we come back from a cruise, our golf cart was missing. We found it in the Hampton Inn lobby. And he says that he asked the pontoon boat passengers to move the boat 5 times through his PA system before the fight erupted. And then the captain told the group he's going to call the police because they had alcohol on the boat and they weren't supposed to. They weren't supposed to have alcohol on the boat. He goes, so then they started giving us a finger. He said, you know, and they wouldn't leave. They couldn't boat. So they had to get police involved. Then the boaters reportedly left the scene, leaving their boat, their pontoon to block the way. So then they had to get help from another captain to use their smaller boat to ferry the senior deckhand to move the boat. And that's when things turned violent. And he goes, in the boating world, it's common if you have to move someone's boat, it's nothing to get upset about. He's like, they still, you know, they must have been in the park or something. They moved it 40 to 30 yards from the dock. And after it was moved, that's when the group came back and they were mad because someone had moved it. And then it broke out into an all-out brawl. So I got to tell you, on first glance, Kane, I feel like the pontoon people were probably in the wrong.
That's what I also gathered by my research.
And my favorite was the beginning when the guy throws his hat up in the air. Guys, there's so many aspects of this fight. I mean, there was a chair. It was like a Mick Foley cage match. Yeah. There was a chair that was involved. And can I just tell ladies something? Ladies, when men are brawling, or if you see men brawling, the stupidest thing you could do is act like you're going to stop something, okay? They're not going to stop because you intervene, okay? It's not going to happen. The best thing that you can do is just let it get them out of their system. And they were just, nobody was pulling, you know, weapons or anything. Everybody was, I mean, most of it, if I'm being honest, was open hand slapping and hair pulling. I was actually very disappointed in the quality of fighting that I was seeing from the men that were on the dock. I don't know if it had to do with the alcohol involved or what. And every single dude from the pontoon boat was shirtless and in flip-flops. And I'm going to tell you something. Don't run on a wet dock when you're shirtless and in flip-flops, okay? Because that is not going to go well for your chestal area. So it's not going to go well. And ladies, don't get involved when they're brawling because you're going to get accidentally knocked back over. And there was one woman who ended up almost being flipped over backwards into the water. It was something I'd never seen before. But just be a courteous boater. Be a courteous boater. I have stories I can tell you because some people act like jack wagons when they get out on the water. And I am a big believer in maritime rules. I believe in boat courtesy. I am hardcore about it. I got stories. So I'm just saying, don't be a jack wagon when you get out on the water and move your boat when you're asked kindly. We got some other stuff coming up you don't want to miss as we get moving because it had to be discussed, you know. Everybody's wondering where you're going to come down on the boat, the riverboat brawl.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So some are asking if it's the end of the vegan food bubble. The irony of that statement, vegan food bubble. Sales of the vegan burger maker Beyond Meat fell by a third as consumers turn to things that are actually real meat. They say it's because of the cost of living crisis. The fake meat, which is made of like cardboard and sadness, is actually very expensive. So why not just have actual animal protein? You know what I'm saying? Southwest Airlines falsely accused a mom of trafficking her biracial daughter. The airline is dealing with the issue, but the mother, who is white, her daughter's biracial, they actually were stopped as they left a plane. It was in Denver. And so Southwest is, yeah, that golly. I mean, I think they need some training. We got a heck of a lot more. Went long, but we stay with us. I'll make it up to you.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
We heard a lot of support. Two-thirds of the audience that I had was very supportive of my position on Ukraine, which is that we haven't done enough. And that while, I think that President Biden has certainly done.
What? Did you just play an Austin Powers clip? Get in my belly. No. What?
Get in my belly.
Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash here. That it's a character name, so don't get mad at me. That was not Fat Bastard. That was Chris Christie. Shame on you for thinking that. Not on me for saying it, but for you. On you. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Bottom of this third hour. We are in a mood today because it's been a slow news week, and we just literally went through a ton of different memes and viral videos about the Alabama boat brawl. And then we followed up with Chris Christie. I'm kind of wondering what the purpose of his candidacy is. Can I be real? Like, why is he running? Yes,
because all we see him on is lefty, MSNBC, uh-huh. CNN, and all that. And we're in a primary. How does he think the left will be voting for him in their primaries?
I don't know.
It's ridiculous.
This is what I think. As someone who has a long and documented fraught history with the establishment, who has never liked me ever. And has gone out of their way to let it be known. I've got a thought. So I know because Chris Christie definitely is I think, and I, some people call the establishment now a sort of uniparty. And I think that the establishment thing is, I think, completely accurate. And him going on lefty networks, who is he trying to reach, as Kane was asking? I think he's trying to reach not the far left people. I think he's trying to pick up some of the independents and moderates over there. And I don't think that he's running because he believes that he has a shot in hell of winning. So here's what this is me kind of doing some tinfoil hattery. I think that there's two things that are happening in this primary. I think you have a group of people who want to be the new establishment for sure. I also think you have the old establishment that's out there. And I think Chris Christie's partially working for them. And then because if you noticed, he only ever goes after two people. He's not a DeSantis fan and he hates Trump. Because DeSantis, as much as Trump people try to say it, and I always think it's stupid when they try to do this, he is not an establishment guy. I definitely remember, because I was out in the streets, I remember when he helped create the House Freedom Caucus, and I remember the establishment blasting him and the other lawmakers for that, ridiculing them. And the House Freedom Caucus, that is the most conservative, limited government, leave us the hell alone. Let's just, we want to keep what we earn and have our guns and just, not get involved in wars. That's them. And they have a very libertarian strain. And the establishment hates them because they were also very good at selling, just being left alone and freedom. And I remember he and they got they caught hell for that. I remember that. I remember going on cable news, hearing my street activism, and I'd have to throw a blazer on over my t-shirt, and I'd be up at whatever, downtown St. Louis or wherever I had to be. And I remember doing these and I was arguing with Republicans about this. And they were acting like all the people who supported the House Freedom Caucus and all this stuff, like we were morons and we just didn't have any experience. Well, now look, we saved you in 2010. You wouldn't have had Trump without all of that work that we all did. So, it still frustrates me today because I see them still kind of doing that. So they've never really liked him. And I think Chris Christie is the cudgel I don't know who they think he's going to clear their way for. He hasn't said anything about Haley. He doesn't really say, he does, there's certain people he doesn't say anything about. He's hit DeSantis over some of the culture stuff because Republicans, as some of the old school uniparty people, are very uncomfortable with that, as I've been telling you. But every time he goes on MSNBC or CNN, he's like a one note singer. You know, he's every, he, it's all Trump, 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 Trump. Well, what are you running? What are you actually running on? That's why I don't think he's actually running. I think he's out there to do that. I think he's out there to turn independents and moderates. That's what I think his purpose is. He's, who's going to vote for him? Nobody's going to vote for him. They're still mad at him because he was on that beach. Remember the beach that was closed down and he's sitting out there? They're still mad at him for that. He sent me a Christmas card one year and I never understood why. This was years ago and I think it was by accident. I only got one. It was only a one-off. Never got another one. Not that I want one. You know, I'm not going to, you know, it was just odd. But I don't know. It was just really very interesting. Very interesting. He's always been very establishment. I remember at grassroots events, there were a couple of lawmakers that people like Newt Gingrich, even Newt Gingrich. Oh my gosh. I think I told you all about this. The first time I ever, one of my first big fights was actually with him over Doug Hoffman. And I started an online fundraiser for Doug Hoffman to take out the Republican, literally who had been a Democrat a second ago, uniparty candidate. It was Dee Dee Scozzafava versus Doug Hoffman. And Doug Hoffman was this very quiet, unassuming guy. He had he wasn't charismatic at all. And he just needed to run and be successful in this race and give a, you know, more conservative vote. He wanted to leave people alone. And all the Republicans got all mad at us grassroots. What are you doing? Well, you're running a rhino. Not even a rhino, literally this was a Democrat last cycle. What's your damage? This is why we keep losing. But I will say Gingrich actually came around and was like, I understand what grassroots are saying. Even if I don't agree with every single one of the means, we have the same end goal. Gingrich was the first to come out and say it. And you would say he's more establishment type. So he got a lot of cred. And I give him, because we had some harsh words. And we'd argued at CPAC before, and he had a, they facilitated, this is like way back when, with grassroots in St. Louis, they had a bunch of grassroots coming in from the Midwest. And he was like, I want to hear what your concerns are and what I can do to help. And I thought that was really cool because everyone else was daggers at us. But there was at one event where Christie came and he never actually sat. Because Gingrich and some of the others were like, let's try to make some inroads and see what we can form a coalition on. We're not going to agree on everything. Some of what you guys want might be a little too conservative for what these guys want or can do because they're concerned about losing their seats, right? They want to stay elected. And I remember there was one event that Christie was out there at, and he was walking around, and he didn't really talk to anybody, but he was walking around shaking people's hands. And some of us were like, this is kind of weird. You're not going to actually talk to people. You're just going to come out here and talk at us and then leave. That's not how this works. You know, you got to say, and you got to listen to what people are saying to you. We are not interested in hearing what you say. You got to listen to us. So that rubs some people the wrong way. And I think it's always stuck. But I really do believe I feel like that's his purpose in this. And I do think that he's acting on part there. I believe that there's part of the establishment that doesn't want Trump. And I don't think that they want DeSantis either. I think that it's that snobbery against that grassroots limited government thing. Now, I'm not saying this is about all Republicans. I think that the uniparty Republican type have definitely, absolutely have shrank. I think that they're smaller than they were and they don't have as much influence. They've been ridiculed to the point of weakness. But I think that's what his purpose is. Because I just don't get it. Everything he says is that. I don't understand it. So I don't know. It's very interesting. A couple of other things I want to make sure that we're hitting, because I feel like we're missing some stuff here. We got into some of the culture stuff. I wanted to get some of this other audio in. Okay. Do you remember, I'm going to talk about this vax thing real quick. Audio soundbite 5, if you can get that prepared. This was do you remember the interview? This was just the other day. Dasha Burns. You remember Dasha Burns? She was the one who interviewed Fetterman, and everyone's like, you did this hit job on Fetterman. and all of this stuff. And she was arguing with DeSantis and saying, oh, well, this is a misrepresentation when you're saying that people want late-term abortions and all this other stuff. And they were going back and forth. I'm going to save that for tomorrow to dive into it. But I'm bringing this up because it's very similar to me to everyone trying to rewrite history when they're talking about the purpose of the clot shot. I don't want to say vaccination, the government injection, because they were saying that in the very beginning, this stops transmission. It's going to stop transmission. It's going to stop transmission. And then you had the CDC, the Walensky, come out and say it actually doesn't prevent transmission. And then you come to find they weren't even testing initial trials. They didn't even have initial trials on this. And now they're trying to say, well, actually, no one was really saying that it did. Art, what? Yeah, that's a new talking point that's like been circulating. No one's really saying ever said that they were, in, you know, talking about stopping transmission. Kane, then how do they explain this? Audio soundbite five. Listen, how do you explain this?
Not just protecting themselves, but reducing their transmission to other people and allowing society to get back to normal.
We can kind of almost see the end. We're vaccinating so very fast. Our data from the CDC today suggests, that vaccinated people do not carry the virus, don't get sick.
Getting vaccinated and getting a booster shot when eligible can save your life and protect you and your family and friends from getting seriously ill and spreading infection.
What do you think the probability is? 80%?
Personally, I think it's 100%. I think that there's a reduction in transmission.
Right. COVID if you have these vaccinations.
We have all the vaccines we need. We just need our people to take it, A, for their own protection, for the protection of their family, but also to break the chain of transmission. You want to be a dead end to the virus. So when the virus gets to you, you stop it. You don't allow it to use you as the stepping stone to the next person.
I like how he used his hand to illustrate. So it like hits the surface. The hand. But wait, so where are they getting this? Well, no one ever said that it's going to stop transmission, Kane. No one said that. I don't know where they're getting this. That?
Yeah.
You realize, doesn't it go on for like 3 minutes, by the way?
Yes, it does.
You know how, guys, you know how much audio, like if you're just doing clips from here and there, you know how much of that is required to make 3 minutes straight of edited video of all these people saying that? That's a lot. And sometimes it's, you know, sometimes granted it might be Fauci a couple of times saying it, but it's everybody. Everybody is saying that. So I don't understand where they're getting this whole, well, no one was actually saying this. It's a rewriting of history. What did they think that they're, I don't understand. What did they think that's going to accomplish? Because that just makes me trust, I mean, I don't think I can trust them less because there isn't any trust there now, right? Anyway, so we have a deficit of trust. Now I'm just suspicious. After you start losing trust and it goes into a deficit, then you start becoming suspicious. So you can't try to rewrite history with us. It's not going to work.
Catch the Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
So would you veto any sort of federal bill that tries to put a nationwide ban in place?
So we will be a pro-life president and we will support pro-life policies. I would not allow what a lot of the left wants to do, which is to override pro-life protections throughout the country, all the way up really until the moment of birth in some instances, which I think is infanticide.
I got to push back on you on that because that's a misrepresentation of what's happening. I mean,
literally not at all.
1.3% of abortions happen at 21 weeks or higher. There's no right. evidence of Democrats pushing for
that's a lot. Their view is that all the way up into that, yet there should not be any legal protections.
There is no indication of Democrats pushing for that.
Well, yes, they are. They've done it in California. They've done it in other states.
They have not instituted that policy.
That is absolute bull.
They basically will say that, you know,
here's why. The Women's Health Protection Act, which was what was being pushed before midterms, literally was pushing as a new statutory right, abortion on demand, taxpayer funded up until birth. That was one of the big things that factored into the Georgia Senate runoff. So don't sit here and say that people weren't pushing it. Your producers did not do your homework for you. I don't care if you disagree with them on it, but don't say that they weren't pushing it. Democrats sure as hell were pushing it. That was a bill that they, you had, who's the guy running against, can't even think of it now, Warnock, the Reverend. He was one of the co-sponsors of it. So don't sit here and say that Democrats were not pushing it. You had almost every damn Democrat senator who had signed up for that as a co-sponsor, and they were all on the floor talking about abortion, acting like, oh, we'd go back to wire hangers and all this other stuff. So she is not right there. And that's a shame, because I thought she did a good job just simply asking fair questions of Fetterman. She didn't go after him. And I would have been fine with her pushing him and being hard with DeSantis here. But don't argue that Democrats were not doing something that they absolutely were. And there's, good heavens, the bill. You can read the draft. We talked about it ad nauseum on this program. It featured prominently against Warnock in the Georgia runoff. So, no, the governor was correct here. She was wrong. She did not have all her information. Don't do the job of a journalist if you're not going to actually, you know, do the job of a journalist. Part of that is the research beforehand. All right. Today in stupidity.
Well, they got a narrative to push, don't they? And this is exactly what points to narrative pushing. Our Vice President, Kamala Harris, says this about the economy.
And you remember years ago how they would debate and talk about, oh, trickle-down economics, that'll work for working people because you see the benevolence of the wealthy.
Oh, my gosh.
Will trickle down on the rest of us.
That is literally not at all how, no.
No.
That is not how trickle-down economics works. It's not, well, you just have to wait for someone to be benevolent. Oh, my gosh. Someone take Econ 101. I get it that economic illiteracy is like one of the worst things that's plaguing this country, but it's so sad to see that it's even infected one of the second highest office in the land. Good grief. Folks, that does it for us today. Sign up for the newsletter over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. Find us on YouTube, Facebook. Have a great night. Back behind the mic with you tomorrow.